Give this opportunity to Groundwork and Center for Environmental Rights to make their input. Over to you.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Robin Hugo. I'm from the Centre for Environmental Rights, and as the Chair said, I'll be sharing this slot with my colleague Thomas Mguni from Groundwork. Just want to start off by saying I'm not sure that this debate about NO2 really takes us very far, whether or not Eskom and Sasol acknowledge that they are major sources or not of nitrogen oxide. Nitrogen dioxide, for example, contributes significantly to PM2.5, which is a big problem in the areas of Eskom and Sasol's operations. But this is clearly not the best forum for testing scientific evidence, and Greenpeace has confirmed that the authors of its report are available to come and present to this committee. What is not in dispute is that South Africa's air pollution is dire, and so Mr. Mguni and I are going to be focusing on failures of air quality governance in our presentation. In the interest of time, I think most people here know who we are. I'm not sure why the slide is cut off. We are members of the Life After Coal campaign, Groundwork, Centre for Environmental Rights, and Earth Life Africa. You can see our aims there. Similarly, I think probably everybody knows why we oppose coal. We challenge and object to the development of new coal plants and fight to reduce emissions and phase out old coal plants because of these devastating impacts that burning coal has for human health, for well-being, the environment, including air, water, and soil, and importantly, for our climate. We also know burning of fossil fuels is the largest single source of global greenhouse gas emissions, and Eskom and Sasol are the two biggest emitters of GHG and other pollution in Africa. Of course, this is all in the context of South Africa being extremely vulnerable to climate change, especially in relation to water scarcity and temperature increases. You also have all seen the research by international air quality and health expert, Dr. Mike Holland. Some of you may have attended his presentation in Parliament last year, which shows that air pollution from Eskom's coal-fired power stations alone, in fact, from only one type of pollutant that Eskom emits, is responsible for the equivalent deaths of more than 2,200 people in South Africa every year, thousands of cases of bronchitis and asthma in adults and children annually. He found that this costs the country more than 34 billion rand annually. That's through hospital admissions and lost working days. This is an example of the external costs of coal-fired power generation that are never properly accounted for and for which the polluter currently doesn't pay. As I say, apart from discounting the impacts of all the other pollutants from Eskom stations, these numbers exclude the significant air pollution from mining, such as coal dust, transport of coal, and contamination of water. We also know coal-fired power stations are notorious heavy users and polluters of our precious and limited water resources. In 2007, Eskom consumed about 307 million cubic meters of water. For some perspective, that's about enough to fill 122,800 Olympic-sized swimming pools for power generation. That's about 10 cubic meters of water, or 125 bathtubs per second, largely for cooling and excluding the water used and polluted to produce and beneficiate the coal. In addition to coal plants' irreversible climate impacts through their high GHG emissions, climate change impacts are also a high risk for the operations of the stations themselves. This, Chair, all in circumstances where all modelling, including by Eskom and the Department of Energy, shows that we don't need new coal plants, which will add at least $20 billion to our least cost energy system. In fact, we should be accelerating the decommissioning of our existing fleet. When South Africa needs new capacity, coal is certainly not the least cost, most efficient, or least harmful source for that electricity. So really, we no longer need to choose between cheap and clean electricity. Renewable solar, PV, and wind have been cheaper than coal for some time now, even if you discount coal's external impact. So we're going to focus on life after coal's aim that's to do with old coal, which largely, of course, has to do with Eskom's coal-fired power stations. I think we all know there are 15, two of which are still under construction, very delayed, hugely over budget. Those triangles, to the extent you can see them, but they'll be more visible in the presentation, the hard copy, are the stations. The bulk, of course, in the Highveld. Kusile is the black triangle. There are two in Limpopo, Medupi's in red, and one in the Free State. All 15 of Eskom stations and all of Sasol operations are in the three so-called air pollution priority areas, which were declared in terms of the Air Quality Act, as we all know, because the high levels of pollution exceed South Africa's weak national ambient air quality standards, which are supposed to be health-based. Other areas then, like Joburg and Tshwane, have not been declared air pollution priority areas, but have extremely high and often worse pollution levels. These air quality standards are exceeded despite the fact that South African standards are lenient, and in many cases outdated, and in urgent need of review and strengthening. They are, as people have pointed out, substantially weaker than the World Health Organization's guidelines, which, far from being aspirationally high, are themselves already 13 years old and are currently being reviewed. It's also worth pointing out that for many pollutants, there's no safe level of exposure. The aim of declaring an air pollution priority area is to produce a multi-stakeholder air quality management plan to improve air quality so that it no longer exceeds the ambient air quality standards, and ultimately for the declaration of the priority area to be withdrawn. To date, not a single one of our priority areas has come close to meeting that goal. That is despite the fact that they were declared in 2006, that's the Vaal Triangle, in 2007, the Highveld, and in 2012, the Waterberg. In fact, the most recent global burden of disease study estimates that in South Africa, air pollution causes about 27,000 annual deaths, outdoor air pollution responsible for more than 20,000 of those. Health impacts are worse for children under five, older people, and the poor, and of course for those who already suffer from ill health. What this means, Chair, is that although we have a constitutional right to an environment not harmful to our health and well-being, many people in South Africa are being exposed on a daily basis to dangerous levels of pollution in the air, with serious impacts on their health and well-being. It also means that because health impacts are worse for children, their best interests are not being upheld by government, as the Constitution requires. Looking at the sources of pollution, a global study by The Lancet last year found that 85% of all air pollution is caused by the burning of fossil fuels or biomass. And in South Africa, industrial emissions, particularly from coal-fired power generation, are major sources of our air pollution and its health impacts, as well as being significant contributors to climate change. Our priority has been the Mpumalanga Highveld priority area, or the HPA, which is home to 12 Eskom coal-fired power stations, Sasol thin fuels, coal to liquids plants, hundreds of mines, and numerous other industrial facilities. Despite the declaration of the HPA 11 years ago, air pollution remains high and at dangerous levels. This, by the way, is not disputed by government or industry. In all of its reports, including its most recent State of Air report at last month's Air Quality Lekgotla, the Department of Environmental Affairs confirms that many in South Africa are breathing air that impacts their health and well-being. I've talked about the health impacts of Eskom stations. Eskom is well aware that its stations are deadly. It's performed its own health impact assessments. Essentially, as we heard today, it says that it is responsible for the deaths of fewer people than Dr. Holland's research reveals. So we heard today that this is about 333 people a year, according to Eskom's own assessments. What it needs to do in order to limit its pollution is to retrofit various pollution controls onto its stations. But it and Sasol argue, in short, and we heard it again today, that the benefits to be achieved by complying with legal pollution standards are simply not worth the costs. We're not aware of any other legal regime in South Africa where affordability is a justifiable excuse not to comply with laws that are in place to protect human health. This, we say, is particularly unacceptable given the way in which the law was developed. In March 2010, following a multi-year, multi-stakeholder process in which Eskom and Sasol were active and vocal participants, South Africa's minimum emission standards were set, which govern the concentrations that polluting facilities are allowed to emit. In other words, how much air pollution is legally acceptable for a coal-fired power station, for a refinery, and other industrial facilities whose processes result in air emissions. So for Eskom, although it emits many more pollutants, it only has to meet standards for three of them. The MES are structured so that industries all had to meet certain standards by April 2015, called the existing plant standards, and then transition to meet stricter standards by April 2020. Now, although these are called new plant standards, they are substantially weaker even than other developing countries. Chair, you asked for a comparator. You can see from these tables that our 2015 standards for sulfur dioxide are about 18 times weaker than China's, 6 times weaker than India's, and even our new plant standards are more than 14 times weaker than in China and 5 times weaker than India's. In fact, since 31 October this year, as we've heard, the situation is even worse. Despite not making this proposed change available for public comment in the draft notice, as is legally required, the DEA published amendments to the law that govern MES, the list of activities, which double the new plant sulfur dioxide MES for existing plants, effectively allowing double the air pollution from sulfur dioxide. With the greatest respect, irrespective of the reasons that might have been given for this decision, it is simply not legally permissible to unilaterally amend the MES. Section 57(2)(b) of the Air Quality Act requires that the notice inviting comment on a draft must contain sufficient information to enable members of the public to submit meaningful representations. If you have a look at the numbers in red, you can see that when we look at the amended SO2 standards, which would apply to all of Eskom's coal-fired power stations and Sasol's 17 coal boilers, they will only be required to meet new plant MES about 29 times weaker than China's, 10 times weaker than India's. We've called upon the acting minister, as Mr. Senene said, to withdraw this unlawful provision in the amended list of activities, failing which we will be forced to institute court action. Notwithstanding the MES being weak, instead of making sure that its stations comply with the law, and despite knowing about these standards since at least March 2010, Eskom has been applying for ongoing postponements of compliance with the MES. In some cases, it has made clear that it never intends to comply and will simply apply for what it calls rolling postponements, reapplying every 5 years until the stations eventually close. We have always maintained that these rolling postponements are illegal as they amount to exemptions from the law. But as we've also heard already today, in the same amendments to the list of activities that introduced the unlawful change to the sulfur dioxide MES, the DEA has confirmed that no more postponements of 2015 MES are permissible, and only one postponement for a maximum of 5 years is permissible of 2020 MES. The framework for air quality management, which together with the list of activities governs the process to seek postponements of MES compliance, was similarly amended. So this is good news, Mr. Chair. The rolling postponements have been now stopped. However, we've consistently pointed out that no facilities in priority areas should be able to seek MES postponements, given that ambient air quality standards in all of these areas are out of compliance. The framework specifically sets compliance with these standards as a requirement and requires the facility seeking the postponement to demonstrate that its emissions do not have adverse impacts, which is clearly not the case for Eskom stations, even on its own version. The list of activities now includes new provisions for seeking a postponement of new plant MEAs, including compliance with other emission standards, previous reductions in the pollutant for which postponement is sought, which it calls measures and direct investments implemented towards compliance, as well as material compliance in the area with the relevant pollutants, ambient air quality standards. We've also heard today about the new provision that's been introduced, which is the ability to apply for a so-called once-off suspension of compliance, which is effectively an exemption from compliance with new plant MEAs. The effect of this is that by 31 March 2025, all existing plants which have obtained a five-year postponement must comply with 2020 standards unless they apply by 31 March 2019 and are granted a once-off suspension of compliance. One of the requirements to qualify to apply for such suspension is that the facility must have a clear decommissioning plan to be shut down by March 2030. Despite this, and despite compelling evidence of the devastating health impacts of Eskom's pollution, the DEA in February 2015 granted Eskom widespread postponements of both existing and new plant MEAs compliance. Eskom has already made four sets of postponement applications, and it appears that it intends to make at least another two sets of such applications in the future. There are currently two new sets of postponement and suspension applications underway for 11 of its stations, although it wasn't clear from Eskom's presentation which stations seek suspension. I think it's seven of them. Although Eskom has been granted these wide-ranging postponements of compliance, an analysis of its own data over a 21-month period by an air quality and energy expert, Dr. Ron Sahu, found that 13 of its coal stations reported close to 3,200 exceedances of the emission limits in its air emission licenses. In other words, even the weaker limits in its licenses where it had obtained postponements of the MEAs in 2015. Dr. Sahu characterizes his analysis as conservative. He excluded all instances where exceedances seemed to be unreasonably high and where Eskom reported an incident in terms of the National Environmental Management Act, that's in terms of Section 30. Where he found reporting to be inconsistent, incomplete, and unclear, he gave the benefit of the doubt to Eskom. As a result, he said his calculations underrepresent the extent of license exceedances. That graph shows you the five worst offenders are Letabo in the Vaal Triangle, Matla in the HPA, Matimba in the Waterberg, followed by Creel and then Duva, which are both in the HPA. Many of these plants with frequent exceedances have, as I said, weaker license limits than the 2015 MEAs, which are 100 micrograms per normal cubic meter for PM, 3,500 for SO2 and 1,100 for nitrogen oxide. So, for example, Matla's NOx limit was exceeded 482 times, its PM limit 82 times, Creel's PM limit 370 times, Camden's NOx limit 47 times, Grootvlei's PM limit 48 times, SO2 limit 63 times. We hope, Chair, to be able to meet with the DG, Eskom, and the air quality officers about this report soon. We await a response from the DEA about a suitable time for this meeting. In addition to the high frequencies of exceedances, many plants have high magnitudes, significantly greater than the license limits. So, for example, just looking at particulate matter, exceedances reached at least 500 micrograms at Duva and Letabo, 600 at Creel, and 1,500 at Grootvlei. That is 15 times the 2015 MEAs. 77% of the exceedances at Grootvlei reached at least 400, and 47% were over 200 at Creel. Despite this, no meaningful enforcement action has been taken against Eskom, and it seeks additional postponements of compliance. This despite the fact, as I've said, that all of its stations are in priority areas with ongoing non-compliance with our weak ambient air quality standards. Our clients and partners and the CER have been supportive, active and vocal participants in the various HPA processes for many years. Frustrated with the lack of progress and ongoing and devastating health impacts related to the failure to improve air quality, we conducted our own analysis to determine whether the declaration of the HPA and the development of its air quality management plan have improved air quality within the HPA to protect health, and if not, why not? Our report, Broken Promises, which you've heard about before, was launched on the 2nd of October 2017. Among its key findings are that, firstly, air quality in the HPA remains poor and out of compliance with health-based ambient air quality standards, with serious impacts on human health and well-being. This is despite the fact that a decade at that stage, and now 11 years, had passed since the HPA was declared. In addition, ongoing non-compliance with ambient air quality standards is likely, in large part, due to the failure of key major industrial facilities to reduce their pollution adequately or at all. Government's decisions to grant MES postponements to the biggest polluters in the HPA, Eskom and Sasol, has made it much more difficult for air pollution in the HPA to be reduced. You will know that in this report we made a number of key recommendations for authorities to implement to show that improving air quality in the priority areas is, in fact, a priority for government. These measures are, we say, the minimum steps required for the state to meet its constitutional obligations in terms of Section 24, the constitutional environmental rights, and for all authorities to meet their Air Quality Act obligations. For example, given the continued non-compliance with ambient air quality standards, we say immediate steps must be taken to reduce pollution. So Broken Promises calls for HPA facilities to comply with the MES, the National Air Quality Offices to review the postponements already granted, no further MES postponements to be granted, and for air emission licensing authorities to suspend the issuing of all new licenses in the HPA until there is consistent compliance with ambient air quality standards. More than 13 months later, and despite many undertakings to do so, there's been no response from the DEA to these very specific demands. This failure to implement and enforce the air quality laws that give effect to our environmental rights means that people continue to be exposed to deadly levels of air pollution, a reality which is acknowledged by government in its own reports. As a direct consequence, people in South Africa are having their rights to an environment not harmful to health or well-being violated on a daily basis. Having worked on these issues for many years, with countless engagements with relevant authorities not yielding reasonable progress in addressing the severe impacts of air pollution, we are now left with no option but to approach the courts on behalf of affected people residing in the Highveld in order to defend the constitutional environmental rights of affected people. I'm going to hand over to Thomas Mguni to talk about what the situation is like on the ground.
Also thanks to the committee for having us here. So, Chair, I think most of the issues I'll be raising are just a repetition of what we've said last year, but also what we've said earlier this year in February. And basically it is to highlight that Sasol, Eskom, and DEA are collaborating to intentionally undermine air quality governance in the country. So since the declaration, we've had the monitoring networks being set up in priority areas, somewhere out of the priority areas. And I think on several occasions, more than once, we kept raising the quality of data that's coming out of the monitoring stations. And it's quite interesting today that we hear from DIA saying that they've got good information, the data recovery rate is better, because if it wasn't for the Greenpeace report, I don't think we would have had any positive information as to how the monitoring system works. But Chair, I think I need to remind myself that in February when we were here, the National Air Quality Officer, Dr. Tuli Khumalo, acknowledged to the fact that there is a challenge in the monitoring network, and they are trying to fix that. They also said they are trying, I think they said it last year, but they said it again in February, to say, we are trying to fix the SAQIS website so that people can get data. And this is what we've been calling for all the time, to say, can we get real-time data so that people could begin to monitor and report any level of exigencies, which is currently not happening. So I think, Chair, it takes us back to a system wherein community people have to rely on their own efforts, on their own understanding, and on their own monitoring of air quality in order to get maybe the desired results, or in order to get an opportunity to say, this is the situation. I think, again, what we picked up last year was that the department decided to do a mid-term review of the air quality management plan, but also CR, groundwork, and community partners we work with in the hyphen, we also decided to do a similar review. And what was interesting was that both reports indicated the same thing, that the air quality management plan in the high belt is not working. So what do we do then? Are there any plans to deal with that? And up until now, I don't think the department came up with a clear process as to say, we need to review the plan so that we can come up with alternative that could work. What we have seen, I think, Chair, is that there's a systematic review of the standards, not to enforce compliance, but to delay compliance. I think Robin has just mentioned that with the granting of the postponements in 2015, some of the standards were relaxed, but still we don't see any level of compliance. So even with the weaker standards we have, industry, especially ESCOM and SASOL, are not prepared to be compliant. So what's the purpose of granting any further postponements when they're not even compliant to the weaker standards they've got? So that process is continuous. Also with the SO2 standards that they're trying to change, why are they changing it? Because they can't even comply to the current weaker standards. Does it mean by doubling the standards, SASOL and ESCOM are going to be compliant? I don't think they're going to be compliant. So I don't think the postponement application specifically speaks to whether or not we want to achieve compliance. I think it's more about, okay, let's do the postponement and protect the interests of business, not the people. So one of the things that makes the priority areas fail, and we've raised this with the department, is that in order for us to effectively deal with air quality and health, we need all the relevant stakeholders to be on board. So last year, we came here to hold a health colloquium, and we invited the Department of Environmental Affairs, we had the health department being invited, the Department of Agriculture. It is because we realized the importance of getting all the relevant stakeholders on board. We cannot address health issues if the Department of Health is not in here. We cannot talk about energy if the Department of Energy is not in this room. And these are the same people we want to see at a community level, because we have all these engagements at a community level, but we don't get DMR to be part of that meeting. We don't get COCTA to be part of that meeting. We don't get the Department of Energy to be part of that meeting. But all of a sudden, you'll see something in the news saying, we are trying to deal with this problem as Co-opta. SALGA is doing this. So how do we consolidate all these efforts with DIA taking the lead? Because we've been raising this with DIA on several occasions. Are they taking reasonable measures to bring everybody on board so that we effectively deal with these issues? So their reluctance to bring all those to us creates a picture that they are systematically trying to ensure that we fail in terms of achieving the intended goals within the air quality management system. And then, Chair, I think Robin has already alluded to the requirements required for postponement. And I think it is DIA's challenge to again re-emphasize that, but ask the question, are we really complying to the law? If we've got conditions to grant postponement, yes, grant postponement as opposed to those conditions. What is the purpose of us having a policy? Then immediately we take a decision which is opposed to that. So I think they need to be clear, not just to say for them, it is law to grant the postponement. It is law, but there are conditions attached to that. And are we meeting those conditions? I don't think so. So this is one question they need to be very clear on. Are we meeting those conditions that will enable us to take decisions around postponements? And if we're not meeting those conditions, why are we giving postponements? I think we came here in Feb and we again spoke about offsets. Now the biggest challenge is, one, and this is the question we raised, does DIA or local government have the capacity to monitor them? And if we don't have the capacity to monitor and enforce air quality, I don't think we have the capacity to monitor the offsets. Secondly, if they keep approving the offsets, have they ever, just one DIA guy, have they ever physically visited the pilot site so that they could give us a clear and true reflection of what's happening? People are frustrated. We know the problems. We know the failures of that. But when ESCOM and SASOL come into Parliament, they always report the positive stuff. SASOL was asked, why did they decide to desert the pilot project in Guatela? I don't think we still have we had that answer up until today. That was asked last year. It was asked in Feb. They never told us the exact reason why they deserted the pilot site in Guatela. About 2 weeks ago, I was with some of the ESCOM officials in one of their MES postponement meetings. I asked them, do you understand the difficulties people are facing in Guazamoguhe? Do you understand the negative things that people are impacted with in the area? Do you understand how the offsets have increased their cost because now they have to buy more electricity, now they have to pay more money for LPG gas? And they never answered that. And still, each and every process of the offsets, people have to pay that through the tariff increase. So they never explain some of this process. They didn't even explain how the offsets relate to air quality and people's health. And these are the key critical questions I requested them to explain to community people, to say, we're applying for postponement. We know we're going to break the law, but these are the implications of this postponement. So I think, Chair, now we're facing a process wherein the department is saying we need a review of the air quality management plan again. Because the first goal of the air quality management plan, which was dealing with capacity, hasn't even been met. That was 3 years ago. So we're sitting with municipalities who still don't have the relevant personnel, who still don't have the relevant resources to monitor and enforce. So now we have to go back and say, now we need to review the plan, and when we review the plan, we will come up with different goals again, with different deadlines. So instead of making sure that the plan works, we will keep shifting the time and hope that things will change automatically. I think that's been the department's approach all along. So for me, if people are going, and this is what, Chair, I don't know if we could make this policy or what, that all ESCOM officials must go and live in Embalenhle and Witban and Middelburg for 2 to 3 years. so that they could begin to feel what people feel. Maybe they will be privileged because they are working and then they can have medical aid. But the people who do not have medical aid, who go into a public sector hospital and only be given a painkiller when that person has bronchitis, feel something completely different. And I know that situation, what it's like. And it's very painful because people feel that on a daily basis. I've been through it. I know how it feels like. But the people who only come in Middlesbrough or Witbank to attend a meeting and then come into this meeting and say, oh, no, no, we've seen a reduction. There's been an improvement. It's because the air quality monitoring network doesn't work. So there needs to be clear. Their monitoring network isn't working. That's why they see an improvement. But if we had an effective working monitoring network, the reading will be completely different. And I'm not saying it. They said it. The National Air Quality Office said the monitoring network is not working. So I'm surprised when they say they are seeing an improvement when their air quality management plan review also indicated the air quality management plan is not working. So I think these are some of the things we need to pay attention to. And some of the questions we normally ask is, what is DIA doing in terms of ensuring that local municipalities have the capacity and the resources to deal with air quality management? And up until now, we don't have those plans. So I'm not going to talk about broken promises. We've had another batch of broken promises, you know, to say we will respond, the minister is working on this, but up until now, nothing is happening. So these are kind of the failures we are experiencing on a daily basis at committee level, self-check.
Okay, thank you very much to Center for Environmental Rights and Grant Work on your presentation, mostly from the perspective from the ground. We will now go to Dia, get a presentation, after which we are going to discuss all of them and then possibly develop a way forward. Dia? A little bit of a graveyard session. Some of us has been taxing week from yesterday. Monday of course was a constituency work. Yesterday we spent the whole day here, after which we went to the house. We finished there around 10 or 7. So basically we had to wake up in the morning at 6, come here, busy, finish, go to the house until 7 again this morning. So you must pardon us when somebody does so from the left side. You must know that there's because of hard work. Okay, who's going to take us through the departmental? It's Tuli.
She had every intention to be here, that's why the presentation is like that. Okay. But it's me again, Vumile Senene. And good afternoon once again, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and ladies and gentlemen. Chair, I just want to indicate that the presentation will try and cover all three items that have been requested, and at your instruction I will continue or stop at each section, so I will receive advice from you. However, the overall of the presentation as we had received it is basically to give progress with regards to the implementation of the Portfolio Committee's February 2018 recommendations, as well as to give an overview of the roadmaps towards compliance by industry, which I also believe that some of the facilities have touched briefly on that one, as well as the offset programs and their progress thus far, and of course the applications that we have received so far with respect to postponements. I also noted, Chair, that one of the items is bullet point number 2 on the agenda as we have received it. It was not the same as what we had. Our understanding was that we needed just to show the emission profile. So that is the presentation that we currently have. So it was not as it is written here, but we'll see when we get there. I will not cover these aspects as I've already talked to in my answering of the questions that were posed earlier on. And so it is just the overview around the issues of postponement, the provisions, and so forth, and indicating currently that there are, in fact, changes to the regulations and the legislation. At this point in time, to just indicate, Chair, that in 2014, prior to the first set of postponement applications, we had received 34. Subsequent to that, we have received 220 new ones. With respect to the implementation of the Portfolio Committee's recommendation, looking towards the sustainable solution for the SO2 compliance, as indicated, we had reported back earlier in the year, and we had engagements with Sasol as well as ESCOM. And I think what really stood out in that report back was that there was not really a sustainable solution that could be presented to the Portfolio Committee, citing a number of issues. And I think key to them, as I've already indicated, Chair, is the issue of other environmental impacts, and I think most importantly the issue of the scarcity of water that would be recommended, or that would be needed for the solutions that would help us achieve the 500, and that being the FGD. And so we were then instructed by the Portfolio Committee that we should actually go back and undertake some work, which part of it would be the establishment of a technical advisory panel that would look at a lasting solution to this particular challenge. So internally in the department, we made a submission and reported back to the minister on the recommendations. The minister did consider, or the late minister did consider the submission, and instructed that instead the department should establish a needs assessment report that would then look at the previous postponements that have been granted and the challenges that we have experienced with those. And basically the intention of that assessment report would then be able to look at where currently we are with the SO2 limit and then assist the minister in deciding on the way forward in terms of whether there is a scientific evidence favoring the establishment of the panel. And so in essence what has happened then is that as a department we've established the terms of reference for this needs assessment exercise so that we can be able then to start the process of doing this needs assessment exercise. However, as already been indicated in this particular sitting, that together with the addition of or the amendment of the postponement provisions, there was a need also to look at the amendment of the SO2 limit, which I've indicated, Chair, some of the considerations that went into that. And I think also just to add a little bit, Chair, on this one, is that the change is seen as increasing the current emissions of facilities. That 500 to 1,000 is seen as doubling the emissions. The reality, Chair, is we are currently sitting far above the 1,000. We are sitting on average at 4,000. If we were to reduce even now from the 4,000 on average to the 1,000, it would be a significant improvement. Of course, taking into account the impacts of that change. And part of it is that with this improvement from 4,000 on average to 1,000, it will not come with the similar challenges that you have with respect to your water resources and other environmental impacts. In fact, that significant drop comes at a lesser impact on the environment than the other one of moving now from the 1,000 to 500 and so forth. So the change is quite significant, but the environmental impact and other associated impacts is much lesser. And so this particular revision then actually opens up a wider scope in terms of technologies that can be utilized. And as I've noted also, it is not a no-investment scenario. However, there would be engagements with the industries if they would still have difficulties at this point in time. But it is envisioned that this particular amendment actually does not leave us with no sustainable solution, as indicated in February when we came here. And so, Chair, that is the overview on the first part of the presentation with respect to the SO2 panel.
Can you go back to the first, the previous slides?
This one.
The second one. Okay, so the meeting, our workshop was in February,
yes,
where we said there must be, we must look at the SO2 solutions. And then January, we had a meeting with SASOL and ESCO. Is that the case?
No. What happened is that the instruction for us to meet was given at the previous, in fact, in 2017, for us to meet and come back in February to report back on the engagement. So okay, that meeting took place in on the 17th of January, and then we reported back to the portfolio committee in February.
The next slide. Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm failing to pick up where that second bullet point is coming from. Is it coming from the assessment report as requested by the minister, or the second bullet point?
As I indicated, Chair, when the question was raised on the public consultation with respect to the SO2 limit, that it was during that public participation process and the comments that were received.
When was it done?
Pardon?
When was the public consultation?
I will ask Elizabeth Masukwaming to just assist. She ran with the process, but I think it was some...
switch off this one.
It's fine. I can use this one. Yeah, it's okay. We can, Honourable Chair, we can share the dates of all the consultation processes that we went through with the two notices. It was quite extensive, so I don't have the dates from the top of my head now, but we can provide that in a few minutes.
Okay, so you don't know when did you do your consultation? Was it by you?
It was not one. We had several of them. We started last year. I think it was in August when we had regional workshops in Cape Town, in Gauteng and Durban. And then we published the two notices for public comment. I think it was around May last year. May this year. And then we had another workshop in June. Just immediately when we published for public comment, we provided a notice in the newspaper inviting members of the public to a workshop that happened on the 14th of June. And after that, there was a final promulgation of the notice.
Okay. So this comes from that consultation. But it was not the subject of a consultation process.
It was. But we did not, during those consultations, present the proposed limit. So it was the outcome of all the discussions that were happening.
but continue.
So
see how you have just explained to why am I asking these questions. Because that bullet point is just coming from nowhere, you know. January there was a meeting with Sasol and Eskom. February we had our workshop, and I believe it was in the workshop where we said, go and find a solution to this thing, because from the presentation, it was clear that there is a challenge around that. The one way of doing it, as proposed by the DG then, was that let's have a panel of experts who are going to advise the minister, so that this thing is not something that is coming from Stamsak, you know. Let's have a process where the people who understands and knows these things are going to give an advice. So the submission is made to the minister. The minister declines that submission. She says that there must be a needs assessment report. So the needs assessment report, you see, you jump there whether it was done or it was not done. Then we get into the increase. So that's why I'm not following the logic, you see, of the presentations there. So I'm not sure whether you're going to explain that, or maybe we must just leave it for us to discuss, because I find it very difficult to follow that one, where it's coming from, you know.
Can I attempt to
answer?
As I indicated, this matter of the SO2 in its entirety is currently sitting before the minister, and we would like to look to that response. We have indicated thus far the information that we have at our disposal, but I think we'll be able to articulate all the issues, because for us to be able to indicate the process that eventually led to that limit, I've just highlighted a few of the aspects in my response that I think maybe it might not be proper and fair to the whole process to indicate bits and pieces, but there is a formal report that will indicate exactly the steps and perhaps align to the whole conversation that we have had from the beginning in terms of the SO2 challenge and what led to this particular amendment. So I would believe that that would be more comprehensive than any answer I can give in front of you right now. At this point in time.
Yeah, because it looks very dodgy, you see. What's happening? No. You see, it looks dodgy because we asked that the panel must look into that. The panel was not constituted. Instead, the minister asked for the assessment. The assessment was not conducted. Instead, there was some public hearing, and then this thing just came from there. You know, from where I'm seated, you know, I'm very worried about that thing. It's not even explained here how that issue is being approached. So let's wait for a discussion and then we'll see, because the fact that the minister is going to respond to that does not disqualify us from talking about it here as a committee and asking for answers here in this parliamentary inquiry, because this is something that was initiated by us in February, and in fact this is the proper platform where this report is supposed to be presented if there was an assessment report that was done as per the instruction of the minister. Even how it's coming up there is just thrown in our face without it being properly justified. You can't even know the dates when these consultations was done. So I think let's proceed with it, but will come with a way forward at the end. I don't think it's something that we should accept as it is. At least from our side as a portfolio committee, because we asked for it. We asked for the panel of experts. I understand why it was declined, but show us whatever process that we followed, which comes to this conclusion. So you can't just tell us about public consultation. You don't even tell us who was there, what was being presented, what arguments were being advanced. Maybe it's just one person who just stood up in the public consultation. No, let's just increase this. I'm just being too extreme in my example, but I'm just saying it's a problem. So I think you must take this thing back to the minister, to the department, to say that we have got a serious problem with this thing, because it's not properly justified, and we would like it to come here back to this committee. You can't just increase when we're saying that, tell us how we must resolve this problem. You don't come to tell us how we must resolve the problem. You then take a serious policy decision. I think we require explanation about that. Not even an explanation. In fact, I don't think you must proceed with that, because we need a presentation about the solution to the SO2 problem in this country to be presented to us as a committee. All right, let's move to the other things.
Noted, Chair. With regards to the second part of my presentation, and let me just indicate, Chair, that it is quite a lengthy section of the presentation. It is structured in the following manner, that we will go through each of the respective power stations for ESCOM specifically, and indicate the postponement that was granted, and also indicate how far they are with their roadmap. And so I would be...
But does this include the previous ones, or is this new postponement?
This includes the previous ones. It's an update of where they are currently in their retrofitting, and the work that they're supposed to do to reduce the emissions. So, because they provide a progress report on the status of their roadmap. So this is comprehensive from the first batch of postponement, including the ones that have been issued recently.
Okay. So you'll start with the previous one, progress, and the new one.
Yes.
Okay. So quite detailed is going to take
long. It is. That's my concern, to say. I hope that the members do have the copies as we've sent them. But just to highlight in terms of the work, and I think in Sasol's case, they've already spoken to some of the progress they've made in terms of their roadmap as well as the offset. So I'm not too sure at what level of detail the chair would want me to go.
Shouldn't we concentrate on the new applications? You did share with us in the workshop
yes,
the previous ones.
Okay, in that case, Chair, I can quickly then scroll through and show you the latest batch that has come. And where we are with those. And to indicate that the majority of these chairs don't fall within the priority area, they are outside the priority areas. There are some here and there that do fall within the priority area. So, again, it's quite a few slides as well. But to indicate, Chair, that the majority of these facilities, they have made significant progress. And I believe it talks to the pollutants that they are dealing with, SO2 being not one of the pollutants. And so we have seen even in the previous batch of applications that these facilities have been thus far been able to meet their roadmap targets and they are currently in compliance. So it's those that have got specific issues as indicated in the previous batch. So if you would like me to go through each and every single one of them and read through, I can do that. But in essence, for example, if you look at the quantum crushing, the progress has been made there and the commitment to finalize the project, they are on track. We are not worried about whether their roadmap will be met or not. And so similarly with the Chevron, where basically the reason they applied for postponement is that there's an IDZ that is being developed that will actually have the infrastructure that will comply with the 2020 limit. And so there are quite a few of those that are requesting a similar postponement requirement. And so those are still on track. So we are quite comfortable. Chair, for example, even with the Chevron refinery, they've already met some of their roadmap compliance requirements. So they are on track to meet. Where I can maybe focus on is currently what is sitting before the department in view of the 2020 limit that industries have to comply, if the chair is okay with that. Because the second batch of postponements, they are quite on track in meeting the roadmap targets.
Okay, just a moment. I just want to check what we have next week. Because I think we can have go through this detail next week. And then we'll have an opportunity then to get to have a presentation on SO2. I think let's go through the details of this on Wednesday next week. The postponement applications. And then we can get that report on SO2. Is it fine?
It is fine. So my understanding, Chair, is that we'll in essence present exactly the same presentation,
yeah,
but go item by item.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. Okay.
Tuli will be back.
Yes, she'll be back that day.
Yeah. And then she can also be part of that meeting. And then the other one, air quality, status of air quality, do you have that?
What we had put together, or maybe before I go to that one, this is the other one, Chair, where we were just indicating the additional postponements that are coming, but we can talk to that. Currently, this is what the department has before us for the next round of postponements, as indicated by Sasol and Eskom. They are in the process of applying again for a further round of postponements. So, what we had put together here, Chair, was in terms of our understanding of the initial request was that we need to look at the emission profile in the country. As you may be aware, we have an emission inventory that we require facilities to report on. So we're able to break down according to the different provinces and the different pollutants where our challenges are. And the good thing about it is that over time, as we continue year after year, we can be able to have an overview of a trend in terms of the total emission from each province and see where the challenges are. But I think based on the discussions that we have had today, for some pollutants, I mean, you can see Mpumalanga is highlighted quite a lot, Limpopo, and these are the areas, of course, where we have some of our priority areas. And so we wanted just to indicate that this is currently what the situation looks like across the country for the different pollutants, not just only particulate matter and SO2. But this is what we have presented in terms of what we understood the request.
Okay, the request was to present the state of air quality in South Africa. We understand that report is there. I think it was presented at the air quality report in Kimberley. Unfortunately, none of us were able to be there. It was during the recess. It was during the recess period. We could not, because we were busy with other matters. I couldn't come. We asked that the week must go, but also couldn't come. So we didn't attend. That's why we wanted you to come and present the state of air quality. So I think you misunderstood the script, but it's fine. We can have that next week, Wednesday. Okay, members, I see the tired faces. Are you able to engage? There is a Sasol presentation. Sasol did not tell us about, Eskom did not tell us about their offset program. Maybe we didn't ask for it, but we didn't get that one from Eskom. Well, we won't blame you because we didn't specifically ask for it. Any questions from the members? While the members are still trying to figure out what to ask, or maybe there's nothing to ask, I'm just worried about Eskom's. There's a slide here which shows the cost of full compliance. Full compliance with MES versus Eskom's emission reduction plan. So I'm just worried about this slide. What does it mean in practical terms? Does it mean that there's not going to be compliance with full compliance because it's too expensive? Yeah? What does it mean in real terms?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. What Eskom's always said in terms of our planning is that the stations have got a limited life. So, for example, we have 6 power stations that will be closing before 2030. And another, if I recall correctly, 3 stations that close before 2035. So if we look at flue gas desulfurization, it takes 12 years to do a power station with 6 units with flue gas desulfurization. 6 years to do the design and go out on procurement, get all the relevant approvals, and then you retrofit a unit per year. So Eskom is always motivated that for the older power stations, we should not be required to retrofit with flue gas desulfurization. And then we've also said that when you look at the implications of implementing flue gas desulfurization, which include a very high usage, a 20% increase in water use, and there isn't sufficient water to do all of our power stations with flue gas desulfurization, as well as the additional mining of limestone and the transport of limestone to the power stations from the Northern Cape, although there is some lime that is believed to be available in the vicinity of the water area, that those mines will need to be assessed further to see if their line would be appropriate for flue gas desulfurization. As well as the...
I'm talking only as of Yes, Chair.
Well, this slide is giving a complete picture about all everything.
So Chair, what Eskom has committed is to reduce their NOx at three of our power plants where we're putting low NOx burners in. And we are also saying that we will be fully compliant with particulate matter by 2025. It is only on the sulfur dioxide that we have a significant challenge in terms of the implementing the technology and the time that it takes to actually install it, the resources that you require for that technology being water and limestone, and as well as the cost impact. And Chair, it's not really, supposed to extent, it is about the affordability to the country, but it's also about the cost benefit for the country. So would we benefit the...
I don't know which question are you answering.
Chair, you were asking what the table means.
I'm asking about what does this slide mean.
Yes.
Leave the SO2.
Okay.
Remember, we had a discussion about SO2. Both yourself and Sasol said you've got a problem with it. We said, let's have the expert to advise us. Unfortunately, our recommendation was not accepted by the minister. And now, that's why we get all this funny recommendation. But leave that one. That one we'll still have to discuss, obviously, going forward. Not for you, but for Sasol as well. On how then do we approach this problem? We know all about the lime and whatever, and all the stories. I'm asking about what does this slide mean? Does it mean that you're not going to comply? It's going to be too costly to comply, because it doesn't only talk to the SO2, the slide. It talks to everything.
Chair, it means that for sulfur dioxide we will not be able to comply. We will only we are proposing only to retrofit Medupi power station, and on the particulate matter we will comply by 2025, and on the NOx we will comply at most of our power stations, but one or two of our power stations we are going to be asking for an alternate limit.
Also, this slide is only about SO2.
The cost does include the retrofitting for fabric filter plant for PM, but most of the information on this slide relates to sulfur dioxide, because that is the
that is the solution that is most expensive to retrofit in terms of money and
natural resources. So it does include everything. But the biggest part of it is actually the sulfur dioxide, especially when you look at full compliance. But when you look at what our proposed reduction plan is, then most of the proposed reduction plan, about 50% of the money spent there is for the flue gas sulfurization at Medupi, and the remaining amount is for fabric filter plants and for low NOx burners.
I think I'll sort of start with Eskom on that last comment. I just want to know you mentioned one or two of the power stations that won't comply. You asked for a different standard, or you know what I'm talking about. Okay. So what is that going to cost to make sure that you do comply to the current, you know, to the standard that's set out? What is that going to cost versus what does it cost for, like, Sasol and Eskom, because both of you are here, what does it cost to apply for these extensions? Well, I don't know if it makes sense, but, okay, you understand what I'm trying, okay, cool. All right, and then for Sasol, I want to know, you said that there's about 1,200 homes, it's probably more, that you've upgraded, etc. I want to know, in context, how many homes are there in that specific area that you have upgraded, if I can put it that way, or households, rather. How many households are there? I think, yeah, I think the rest is more about the postponement, so I'll ask that next time. Thanks, Jay.
Okay. Honourable Perez. Next Wednesday. Oh, okay, yeah, no. Yeah, you're away. Honourable Perez.
Thank you, Jay. I've got a couple of comments and one question. I must admit the South African standards being much weaker than the rest of the world is quite disturbing, especially when you see the amended. But I'm also disturbed is what we were told about the reality that we're sitting at 4,000 milligrams. I mean, that is really disturbing. But the question, and I wanted to support you on the on those amendments. I really believe that to take it back to the minister, I think we need a detailed presentation on the SO2, so I'd support you on that one. But the question is that Eskom in their presentation never mentioned how many additional postponements. Now, is that captured in this detailed report that we're going to hear next Wednesday? Because it's not in the Eskom, but is it in this document that we're going to get next Wednesday?
Come again, what's the question?
Well, they never went into detail in the presentation about additional postponements and suspensions of compliance. They never went into detail, so that I don't know whether those postponements are captured in the department's compliance statements that we haven't got into, and the
I think so.
And the applications for further postponements. If it's there, then I'm covered, you know.
Yeah, it's there.
No. Can I just correct, Chair? We can only indicate what has been received, not what ESCOM intends. So currently, we only have one that we are aware of. That is before us. So the report will not cover that.
No, I missed what Honourable Perdon was saying. Well, are you saying that whatever they submitted is contained in the report?
I'm asking because there are applications for further postponements. Now, we weren't told what those further postponements were in the Eskom presentation, but there are applications for further postponements in the department's presentations. But we're told now that's only what has been submitted. So are there further postponements that Eskom is not telling us? I just need clarity on that.
Okay. Does Eskom intend to submit any further application for postponement? I think that's the question.
Chair, shall I answer Honourable Tiankam first and then
second
question? So on the first question, what will it cost to do the applications for the technology? And in addition to the application that we go out and do the postponement application, the public participation process that goes along with that, as well as we also need to do technology assessments to determine what kind of technologies would fit to the plant. On the technology assessments, our engineering team does that. My recollection is that is in the region of between 10 and 20 million rand to do an assessment across the different technologies and the different power stations. And then as you go along and get into more detail, it could become a little bit more costly. But that doesn't get carried out at all of the power stations. It then gets carried out at the power stations where we would start doing the designs. And that goes into the cost, the capital cost that we would then incur to put the technology in. But the applications cost in the region of 3 to 5 million to do the postponement application, and that's for the independent consultants and the specialists. The technology, so when I talked about the technologies that we were going to be asking for alternate limits on, that was specifically for low NOx burners, and to retrofit one power station with low NOx burners is 2 billion.
So our estimation was that the retrofitting of all the plants
that needs to be retrofitted was between 15 and 20 billion. We are retrofitting 3 of them, and another 2 of them we're optimizing the boiler so that we can comply with the 750 milligrams. And at our other stations, which are very little above, they perform around 1,000, we would be asking for and those stations would invariably be the ones that are closing down sooner than the ones that are going to continue operating. And then
in terms of additional consent, yes, we are asking for additional consent. It was not in our presentation.
We actually have only gone out on Monday with that application to the public for public comment. It is available, and we can provide the information, but we can also provide the link, which has all the different reports.
Okay, so you have not yet submitted to the to DEAR.
Chair, the date for submission is the 31st of March.
Next year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think there's Honorable Makhubele, and then we are wrapping up.
Yes, I nearly missed out, but just a few issues. Earlier in the previous session, when we were engaging the weak minimum emission standards, other people indicated that they would forward us or submit some reports. All I want, Chair, I know that it may not be the same thing, that DEA will still explain how they came to the revision and so on, but whether they themselves don't want to as well work out how these standards were arrived at as well, just for us to understand the basis, so that together with other reports, at least there's a fair comparison as to what it is, if that will be acceptable, Chair. Through the second issue, in terms of the offset, ESCOM simply indicated in one line that they're making progress, but they did not necessarily go into what that progress it is and so on and so on. All I want to understand firstly is whether these offsets are not done annually. Is it a once-off, one program sort of a project which runs until the end, or it's something that we can, when you talk progress on it, is it concluding a year, or how does it conclude? But in that, Chair, there's been complaint about the groundwork and whoever works with them. What I knew was that there used to be stakeholder engagement fora or forums. Whether those are still effective, why should they come to complain in Parliament and we don't give each other some clarity at that level where these communities are and these stations are? The last but one, Chair, perhaps from groundwork, CR, Greenpeace, and so on, just to understand their capacity in engaging these issues, whether they are utilizing the right personnel, and so on to the scientific basis, as earlier on we had, how some of the reports were being dismissed. The one on postponement, as asked from ESCOM, whether they intend forwarding other postponements. I think the same question goes to SASOL. is there any intention to still field or submit further postponements? May we be given that clarity as well?
Okay. So,
Honorable Makuvele, yes, there is intention. We are busy preparing for this another round of postponements. Our public participation process will start in January, and as ESCOM's also indicated, that needs to be submitted to the department by the end of March next year.
Okay, so it's going to be postponement 2025 or 2030?
Yes, to comply with new plant standards by 2025.
Okay. All right, do you want to comment CR, groundwork?
Yeah, maybe to start with, I think we have very credible expertise, and I would go on and try to show you an example that when we launched the health report, that was done by Mike Holland. I think...
Was done by...
Mike Holland, the health report. Even SACOL didn't dispute the facts. Even ESCOM didn't dispute the facts. The department didn't dispute the facts. They might have questioned the numbers, but they didn't dispute the facts that air pollution and health are related. We've on several occasions brought Professor Eugene Kane Cross here, and I think most of the information that he gave in making the submissions, in terms of conclusion, very often we didn't hear or see the department being opposed to that. So even the latest report, especially the ESCOM report and how that relates to non-compliance and how that relates to how it affects people's health, it was presented, and not even the ESCOM guys disputed that. The department also, on several occasions, they never had a problem with that. Then I think the second aspect with regards to the stakeholder engagement forums. Now, I think it was pretty clear. The first one, which was the air quality management plan multi-reference group, was wrong. And then we got the local forums, which we call the implementation task teams. And I think they're there, but they're fully dysfunctional. I would say we go there and talk, we don't see results. And part of the things I mentioned earlier to say, we go into these meetings and say, we've got a plan, we need to implement, these are the processes. But up until now, the local municipalities that are involved in those sectors do not have the capacity even to attend that meeting, let alone participate, to attend that meeting. We always see high levels of absenteeism from local municipalities. In fact, if I were to mention Kangala specifically, normally the only municipality that will attend the ICT meeting is the Emalahleni local municipality. You don't get people from Stifjordi attending. You don't get people from Victor Kanya attending. And it is also in this very same forum where we said DEA must assist the ICT, being the local government, they must assist in making sure that we get the Department of Health on board, we get the Department of Minerals on board. Nothing is happening. So today, we just go there, listen to the reports, listen to what the companies are saying in terms of their emission reduction plan. We don't see the reports as to whether or not those emission reduction plans are being implemented. If there's non-compliance in terms of the EL, we don't get a report as to whether or not those industries have been penalized or corrective measures have been put in place.
Okay, any comment? Okay. Prof?
May I just make one comment about this last, about the capacity that Groundwork and CER and Greenpeace have used? I mean, I would say that I would challenge you that you do not draw upon the experts that sit here in South Africa and the research that has happened in South Africa. And I would hope that actually, because this is so important, that we could, you know, work together on this to solve it, in that the modeling that went into the Holland study, he himself, I'm not an economist, but I looked at his CV, I am sure that his analysis on that aspect is very good. However, the modeling that went into it, the work that we do, that wasn't robust modeling that fed into it. However, you know, that is something that the CSIR, we can do. We can stimulate Anthony to feed into his expertise or the Medical Research Council's expertise doing these types of analyses. So I just wanted to point out that I think there is a wealth of local capacity that could also be leveraged to help with these studies and to help with getting the answers that we need to go forward.
Okay, it's a challenge to Greenpeace, to CR, to groundwork. It's a challenge, let's leave it at that. Okay, we want to wrap up, Prof. You want to come again? Question to the members.
Very quick question to Earthworks, if I may. They made constant reference to the weak South African air quality standards. Could they please clarify weak with respect to what? And second part, is there any country in the world that they can refer to that use the WHO guidelines as national standards? Thank you.
It's quite unusual. It's not the usual way of doing things. But I will allow that question to be answered if CR wants to answer that question.
Chair, can I challenge the professor again? Can he go and live for 2 months in Witbank or Secunda? Then he can get a clear answer.
All right. That's not how we conduct things, and I think you know about that. That's not how we do things. There is a question asked, let's get a response if you want to respond, and then we will summarize. It's your slide on minimum emission standards. It's not working. You can move to the next one. Try this one here.
I think that the prof was actually asking about ambient air quality standards and not emission standards. And I can't immediately answer him, but I'll do that with great pleasure. They're weak compared to WHO guidelines. I'm not sure I understood the question. And we can look at which other standards are similar to the WHO ones.
Okay.
Clarity, Mr. Chair?
No. We don't do that. It's not a public hearing. It's a meeting of the committee. I guess that discussion can take place offline about which other country uses the WHO standards. That you are saying that we are not, South Africa is low in terms of complying with those standards. But I think there was a comparison with China, with Germany, with India, with Indonesia, with Thailand about the minimum emission standards. I think that's what was reflecting here, that South Africa's standards is lower than the one in India, in China, in Germany, in Indonesia, in Thailand. I think what Honorable Makobela was saying should be how we then follow it up to say, let's ask the department to come and sort of justify some of the assumptions that were made in coming up with the standards. And then that should be done next week, Wednesday, just to satisfy ourselves that there was a lot of thought, application, science that was applied in coming up with this, the standards. So that can only happen next week on Wednesday. So that we then understand, because it's been questioned now, and it does look like there is no immediate response. So let's give you time to go and do that. And those who also want to make submissions, we are ready to engage with the. You are free to send them to Chileka, the committee secretary. And when we meet, it will be circulated to members to engage. Do you still want to come?
To confirm, Chair, that this particular exercise is with reference to the minimum emission standards.
Yeah.
This comparison. Thank you.
Yes. That's that. Okay. I think we have had a good discussion. Of course, it was deliberate that we had to focus on minimum emission standards on air quality and use that report of Greenpeace sort of to provoke the discussions. Because indeed Greenpeace, they are environmental activists. Their duty is to surface the issues, bring them to the fore, and to have a discussion, highlight whatever environmental issue that they want to highlight. We as Parliament, our role is not to take sides, but to make sure that issues get discussed here. We have said that as a committee we will have colloquiums every quarter, and we have been having them, highlighting what is current in the environmental space, the discussions that are taking place, because we wanted to do that to make Parliament to be a forum for discussion, for engagements. We create a platform where all the competing ideas can come and be expressed here in Parliament. So that's what we wanted to do, even in this report. We wanted to get everybody else, including those who are critiquing, to say, here is a report that has been issued by Greenpeace. We ordinarily and naturally are concerned about what is happening in Mpumalanga, the state of air quality in Mpumalanga. We are creating a platform here in Cape Town. Come and present. Department response, ESCOM respond. Whoever who can come and present, even critique that report as we have done. So that is the actual intention, is to create this national platform as a platform for debate. But of course, we are not just a debating forum. We exercise oversight. We make sure that things are supposed to be done the way they are supposed to be done. I must say that the situation as it is in the Mpumalanga Highveld priority area, it is a cause for concern. Especially when I look at that map. And I think the prof also had a coffee mark to say it's not new information, it has been there, and he has got a coffee mark to prove it. He's got a coffee mark to prove it. That coffee mark is something that happened before, but it shows that it's a problematic area that needs to be attended. And how it gets attended, I don't think it should be business as usual. No, somebody was saying, explaining it away. There must be something extraordinary that must be done to attend to the state of air quality in Mpumalanga. Of course, we understand that we are a developing country and therefore we require development. We can't say, for instance, that there mustn't be any issuing of new atmospheric emission licenses, any new development taking place that side, because we need the economy to grow. We are growing at 0.5-0.7% currently, compared to China that is growing at 6%. We need to have employment creation, we need the economy to grow. so that we can improve the standard of living of South Africans. But that must not be done at the expense of the environment. So there must be a way where they will strike a balance between development and between compliance with environmental legislation. So that situation there, I think for me, I don't get a sense that we're doing much to attend to that, to attend to the state of air quality in that area. Okay, the minimum emission standards, I think we'll get presentation next week, along with the postponement applications on why the standards, what informed the standard, what are the underlying assumptions, because the idea of putting the standards is to generally protect the health of the nation so that we are not exposed, or South Africans are not exposed to excessive emissions and they get sick, there's impacts, health impacts, and people die. That's the primary purpose of coming up with those standards. So that below a certain standard, it is going to cause major impacts. So let's get that report that justifies, in view of what has been raised, for instance, by CR, to say our standards are like this, are robust, they can be compared with all other standards. Of course, comparing APOL with APOL. And then the offset, you know, there's always been concerns about the offsets. I don't know how the department is managing this. Groundwork is raising it again here, that the governance around the offsets is not really proper, how they get identified, how they get consulted, and so forth. We did raise it in the past that these community meetings and stuff must make sure that it happens, people get invited there. Communities get to choose that this is a solution that will be acceptable to us. So I don't want to pass judgment to say it's not happening like that, but it's a concern again that gets raised, and I think the department must attend to it. The SO2 one, we must get a report next week. In the meantime, I think we shouldn't proceed with anything that we're planning. First of all, I think it was wrong for the department to take this route when it was the portfolio committee during that workshop which said, let's have this approach, let's take this approach, so that whatever solution that is we come up with is informed by the expertise that are available in South Africa. Now, that was ignored, and even how you came up with this cannot be explained to anybody. So I think let's go easy on this one and not implement, come and justify to the committee next week, so that whatever that we said in January that must be done, I think it must be done. Because what we say here, I think, must really be respected. We are, you know, it becomes bad when we get undermined. And then even the way of being undermined, people can't even explain what decisions that they are taking. I thought we have passed the stage of undermining each other. And whatever that gets done, we're doing it, all of us agreeing, this should be the way. So, But let's have a discussion next week. I'm sure that you will advise the DG and the minister that what we said in February has not been done. So we're requesting that it must be done. There mustn't be any shortcut to addressing these problems, because these are not individual problems or problems that affect the individuals. They affect the entirety of the country. They affect the nation. So how we resolve them, it must be a collective effort of resolving this this problem. But I think, thank you very much for all of you for coming. As always, we have got this robust engagement. We relax some rules, a few, some on few occasions today, to allow engagements to take place. But yeah, generally, we are very happy with the discussion. I think let's keep these members for next week. You know, this package, so that we don't have to waste paper again. We can bring this because it's going to be the same information used. What will be addition is the on MES and what else? The SO2. SO2, yeah. Why was the those changes? Thank you very much. I think the meeting is adjourned.